Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Friends and neighbors, we welcome you to the Bill Press Pod, to this week's roundtable, and a chance to look back at the big news of the week with three of Washington's top political reporters. We gather round the table this morning, this Friday morning, October 23rd, still reeling from last night's second presidential debate, where the rules were changed and mics were muted because President Trump behaved so badly in the first one. For the most part, this second debate was more civil, but did either candidate score on any issues? And with only 10 days to go, did anything happen to change the course of this campaign? At least last night's debate went better than Trump's interview earlier in the week with 60 Minutes, which got so uncomfortable for Donald Trump that he got up and walked out. On other fronts, Senate Republicans sent Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to the floor for a vote Monday. Mitch McConnell apparently killed any chance of a vote on the stimulus before November 3rd, a second stimulus. And Rudy Giuliani made his Hollywood debut as star of a new Borat movie. Here to sort it all out, Addy Baird, national political reporter for BuzzFeed. Jason
Hi,
Dick.
Bill.
Hi, Addy. Jason Dick, deputy editor for Roll Call.
Morning.
And joining us for his debut on the Bill Press Pod, Jeff Dufour, editor-in-chief of the National Journal. Hi, Jeff. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks.
All right. So we won't start with Rudy Giuliani's Borat movie. But let's start with last night's debate for sure. There was so much to unpack there. Each of you, what was your kind of general takeaway impression from the debate? Addy, start us off.
You know, this might sound crazy, but I didn't think it was that bad.
In these days, that's the most positive thing maybe that anybody can think of saying, right?
It's the most positive thing I can think of saying. I will say Kristen Welker was incredible. That was maybe the best moderated debate that I have ever seen Trump in. She did an incredible job of fact-checking without letting it be, taking too much time or seeming over the top. She really seemed like she handled both of these candidates. It was really an impressively moderated debate. And for that reason, I think it really, like I said, wasn't all that bad. I think having the mics muted was helpful. There were moments where it felt like that was maybe a myth. But I thought that it was definitely less shouty and hard on the ears than the first debate, and very well moderated.
How about it, Jason?
I pretty much second what Addy is saying. I did not have very high expectations for a some sort of dignified display of political philosophies and so forth. But it wasn't the sort of train wreck that I think that a lot of people were wondering about. I mean, when people are speculating, will he or won't he listen to his political advisors as the game, speaking about Trump, speaking of the president, we've sort of reached a point where our expectations are so low that it's not that hard to get over the bar. With that being said, I mean, the way that each candidate handled it was fairly well. I mean, this is like, I mean, they were barbed at times, but they were able to stay on task. I think largely because of Kristen Welker, as Addy said. It doesn't mean that I didn't have a headache at the end of it. I didn't need a few belts of bourbon. but in general, like, I don't know if it's changed anybody's mind, but it was the thing that we have come to sort of expect from previous campaigns where, you know, like there's a back and forth and, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, either a draw or a win or a loss.
Yeah. Jeff, how do you unpack it?
I think paradoxically, the format change that was necessitated by Trump's own behavior last time might have helped him a little bit.
Good point.
Threat of the mute button hanging over him, and maybe his own television sensibilities. I think as a former producer, he maybe knew that he didn't come off that well in the last debate. But if you'd beamed in here from 1992, this thing would have seemed recognizable as a presidential debate. You'd probably be surprised to see Donald Trump on the stage, but it would at least look like a presidential debate. So that was a victory, again, clearing a very low bar. I can still, for instance, this morning, tick off the topics they discussed: coronavirus, immigration, right. health, foreign policy. I literally have no recollection at all what topics they discussed in what order during the last debate.
Yeah. By the way, I noticed that none of you mentioned the biggest mystery for me, and I'm still trying to figure it out. Are buildings with no windows or tiny windows. Anybody explain that?
I'm obsessed with this. I can't explain it. It doesn't mean anything. But it has, I tweeted this last night, it has the same energy as his thing where he randomly will be like, there's no water coming out of the shower heads. And you're like, what? What the hell?
And you have to flush the toilet several times, 15
yes.
times.
And yes. If the wind doesn't blow, your TV won't come on.
No. Right.
Actually, my favorite part, because it was the windows thing was in the context of talking about climate change and the Green New Deal and so forth. But my favorite part of that whole exchange was when they were talking about wind, and he said that the wind like actually creates emissions.
Yes.
I was like, right. I mean, granted, like you can't really think too seriously. You can't really try to unpack some of this stuff because it's pointless, like for a sane person to try to do something that is so crazy. But it's just like, that was so great. And you know, the sad thing is somebody probably believes it out there, but you know.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues. They started off with coronavirus, where Donald Trump said, again, we're turning the corner and we're learning to live with it. Who won that one, Jeff?
I thought that was a clear Biden win coming out of the gate. Trump says, someone last night in the course of all the fact checking said that he said, I think 38 or 39 times so far that we're turning the corner or it's going to go away. And he trotted that out again last night at a time where the headlines are splashed everywhere that cases are spiking all over the country again. It was not the time for that message.
There were over 1,000 people died yesterday.
I think it was 1,100 on Thursday died. So we're back up to summer levels. So I thought right out of the gate that was a point to Biden.
Healthcare
and also,
I
just want to say too that like Biden's direct response to that is like that we're not learning to live with it; we're learning to die with it. I mean, that may have been a rehearsed line, but boy, that landed like you know, I sort of you know was like, whoa. I mean, that's a stark kind of line, and it's also indicative of kind of where we're at, where we are learning to like process how many deaths are going on.
Right. Healthcare, of course, was another big issue. And President Trump made the point that, for Joe Biden, no matter what he says, it's the Bernie Sanders plan, it's socialized medicine, and it's AOC plus three. They're gonna be the ones to be the rule. Joe Biden flashes back on, hey, man, who do you think you're running against? Here he is.
When he says public option, he's talking about socialized medicine and healthcare. When he talks about a public option, he's talking about destroying your Medicare, and destroying your Social Security. And this whole country will come down. You know, Bernie Sanders tried it. In his state.
Okay. Let's hear Vice President Biden respond. He's a very confused guy.
He thinks he's running against somebody else. He's running against Joe Biden. I beat all those other people because I disagreed with them.
Addy, he's running against me.
I mean, I, I don't even quite know what to say about this because it's so ridiculous on its face, you know? Like, Joe Biden is not Bernie Sanders. And I will tell you, as a 25-year-old with a lot of lefty friends, they would love if he were. But, like, he is hard. They shouldn't even be in the same political party. This is, like, part of the problem. Trump also said that Kamala Harris was further left than Bernie Sanders. And it's just one of those moments where you're like, these people live in a different universe than we do.
Right. Another issue, of course, just going quickly through this, the Black Lives Matter movement, and they got back and forth into what different people had said. The president again claiming that he had done more for African Americans in this country than anybody, with the possible, I underline, possible exception of Abraham Lincoln. So, Jason, the president or the vice president came back talking about some of the racist comments that Donald Trump has made. Here's a little clip.
Abraham Lincoln here is one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire, every single one. He started off his campaign coming down the escalator saying he's going to get rid of those Mexican rapists. He's banned Muslims because they're Muslims. He has moved around and made everything worse across the board. Come on. This guy is a dog whistle about as big as a foghorn.
Jason, maybe another rehearsed line, but... pretty good one.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I was sort of surprised that Trump didn't come back with some of the law and order stuff at this point. I mean, I think that, you know, Biden was able to land a blow here. I mean, maybe we just sort of take it for granted, like where the president is with the Proud Boys, which, and that was a muffed line that Biden had at one point in the debate, calling them the Poor Boys, which led to a lot of Queen Bohemian Rhapsody memes, I'm sure.
Oh, I was thinking Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Just a poor meme. Yeah. There's a lot of classic rock going on here. But you know, I mean, this was I was a little surprised. I wasn't surprised that Biden was reminding people of the racist comments and the racism. I was surprised that Trump just sort of took it. Maybe right. He's just like, well, that's just who I am, you know, because he usually is able to bring it back to the law and order theme, which, you know, may or may not have an effect. I don't know. But it was interesting that he didn't try to you know, go back with that, because that had seemed to be this consistent theme for a while there.
Yeah. So, Jeff, I thought one of the most striking moments of the debate actually came at the very end. I mean, we've talked about what a great job Kristen Welker did. And I thought her very last question, this is your – okay, you've won, right? This is your inaugural speech. What do you tell the American people? You know, Donald Trump just rambled on and attacked Joe Biden, and he's going to create a great recession, and the economy is going to go in the toilet. Which I thought was a strange use of his time, his 60 seconds. Joe Biden looked right at the camera and, in effect, gave his inaugural address. Here he is.
I will say, I'm an American president. I represent all of you, whether you voted for me or against me. And I'm going to make sure that you're represented. I'm going to give you hope. We're going to move. We're going to choose science over fiction. We're going to choose hope over fear. We're going to choose to move forward because we have enormous opportunities to make things better. We can grow this economy. We can deal with the systemic racism. And at the same time, we can make sure that our economy is being run and moved and motivated by clean energy, creating millions of new jobs. And that's the fact. That's what we're going to do. And I'm going to say, as I said at the beginning, what is on the ballot here is the character of this country. Decency, honor, respect, treating people with dignity, making sure that everyone has an even chance. And I'm going to make sure you get that. You haven't been getting it the last 4 years.
Jeff?
That's the kind of closing statement, again, that we've come to expect in debates.
It
was recognizable. It's the last chance he's going to have to speak to the entire American population at once between now and November 3rd. And he took advantage of it. Trump really has a problem with this because not only can he not articulate what he wants to do in a second term, he has trouble articulating even why he wanted to be president in the first place in the first term. He's had chance after chance after chance. Why do you think you should be reelected? Well, we've done a great job. That's all he says over and over. We've done a great job. He offers nothing else. He should have three bullet points, and he can't recall even that much. We've done a great job. We're going to have a great plan. It's going to be a beautiful plan. That was one of Trump's weakest moments, in fact, in healthcare. Not only in the 60 Minutes debate, but last night when he gets called out on healthcare, he says, "Oh, you wait. This is going to be a beautiful plan. It's going to be big. It's going to be like nothing anybody's ever seen. Well, what is it? Don't worry about it. It's going to be beautiful."
And Addie, in fact, we've heard that plan is coming for, what, 5 years now?
Yes. The plan has been coming every 2 weeks for 5 years. It's like that episode of 30 Rock that's like, you know, the pilot says that the plane will always be leaving in 20 minutes because 20 minutes is long enough for people to like know they have to wait, but short enough to not be mad about how long they have to wait. That's how this healthcare plan feels. It's always 2 weeks away.
Right. You guys, I think I figured it out. The healthcare plan is being audited.
Yes, absolutely, like
his tax returns. As soon as the audit is over, we'll get the healthcare plan along with the tax returns.
What's funny about this administration, I feel like, is it feels like the last 4 years have been 1,000 years, obviously, but in a lot of ways it's like time is a flat circle. Like the healthcare plan is always coming, the tax returns are always under audit and he really wants to release them, it's always infrastructure week.
Right. And you know, the other thing is, there was, I'm sure the people who were the busiest people last night were the fact checkers. I don't know, I haven't seen a count yet of how many just outright lies that Donald Trump told last night. You know, that Joe Biden's the one who said super predators, right? That that Joe Biden is against all fracking, that Barack Obama predicted we're going to have a nuclear war with North Korea. I mean, it went on and on and on. I guess, Jeff, we're just used to hearing them, so people just, they just roll off people by now.
Yeah, I think
Or we're rounding the corner. That one again.
Yeah, I think the falsehood count was somewhere around 50, and Biden had a handful.
Oh yeah,
himself, and truth be told, Biden stumbled over his words several times. He didn't have Trump wasn't interrupting Biden, but Biden interrupted Biden more than a couple times. I thought Trump scored a couple points on the 94 crime bill when they got into the issue of race. And he kept going back to Biden being a career politician and not getting a lot of the things done that he wants to do, that he claims to want to do now. That's an effective attack line. The problem is it's more effective for Trump when Trump is an outsider claiming to run against the politicians versus having been the top politician in the country for 4 years now.
Yeah,
he can't take that outsider mantle anymore.
Right.
But when Biden gets bogged down in those details, he tends to lose people. He has a hard time articulating exactly what his plan is going to do. I don't know about you, but I had a hard time. I'm plugged into this stuff, and I had a hard time following what Biden was saying on healthcare and what exactly his plan was going to do. Much less somebody who was sitting in their living room just tuning into this the first time.
Yeah,
Jeff, I just wanted to add on to that. I think one in particular point where I totally felt that way, Jeff, was when he was talking about a public option. The way Biden described a public option was incomprehensible.
It was not even really
a public option at all. And I thought that was really too bad because I think for so many people, a public option, which is the ability to buy into Medicare or Medicaid, whichever, you could basically have a way of stabilizing the, and that's kind of, I think, what Biden was trying to say, was that like it would provide competition to help stabilize the ACA market. But like, it was not a good way to describe it. And it was super confusing.
No, he made at one point he made it sound like it was only for people on Medicaid.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is such, I think, a powerful and such a simple concept. But not the way Joe Biden described it last night. Mm-hmm. You couldn't tell what the hell he was talking about. So, Jason, the other big media moment of the week, of course, was, yet to come for the most part, was the 60-minute interviews with each of the presidential and vice presidential candidates, all to be aired on Sunday night, except we've already had the sneak preview of the Donald Trump interview with Leslie Stahl, which he was not happy with. That did not end on a good note when someone suggested that it was now just a short of the time for Mike Pence to join him. The president says, "I've had enough," gets up and walks out. Here's that little tense moment with Leslie Stahl.
Excuse me, Leslie, you started with me. Your first day, it was, "Are you ready for tough questions?" That's no way we're done. No way we're done.
Leslie, this is the first warning. I think we have 5 minutes until we have the vice president step in. Is that about right?
Well, I think we have enough. Really, we have enough. I think we have enough of an interview here. Okay, that's enough. Let's go. Let's go.
Well, Jason, I think we have enough. I'm out of here.
Yeah, and you know, I look at it. It's hard for me not to think. You know, Jeff mentioned the president's time in television, and you know, what happens, I think, with a lot of people in entertainment is, particularly as they age, particularly as they run out of ideas, is they just kind of go back to the same thing that's worked before. He loves to attack the press. He thinks that it you know, fires up his folks. He also, you know, doesn't like some of the people who are interviewing him. I mean, the dislike seemed to be genuine with Leslie Stahl. You know, he's not always, you know, mean to people, particularly in the White House corps, but you know, press corps. But it just seemed like, you know, that he's just going to the well again. This is like the 10th sequel, and at a certain point, people just start to tune it out. And you know, when he released like the whole, you know, part of it on Facebook and so forth, then it was just like, you know, it's just not that interesting. I mean, most people they're not going to sit for an hour to watch, you know, this unfiltered. I mean, it's almost like an avant-garde, you know, like production, you know, like this Warhol-like thing of like just images and him back and forth. It's just like, ugh. I mean, who's he trying to reach here?
I don't get what he gained by releasing this thing early, other than making himself feel good, I guess. Addie, who's that appeal to, right?
I'm with you, Bill. I don't know. And what I think is kind of odd, and this is something that Trump tends to do often, honestly, I never would have thought for a minute about this interview, really. I just wouldn't. And the fact that Trump has now made it such an ordeal, he's tweeting like, you know, clips from it. He's tweeting about it constantly. He's walking out of it. Now I'm like, well, I got to watch this interview.
So Jeff, the real question about the debate is, did it change? Okay, 47 million people have already voted, right?
Yeah.
Did it change the direction of this campaign, do you believe, in any way?
No, I think the numbers have been baked in for so long. The contours of this race have been so set for so long. The most important number I like to cite when people ask me this and why it's different from 2016, I think, is that at this time in 2016, there were 15% of voters who said they were either voting third party or they were undecided. Right now, that number is about 6%. It's about 3%. Third party, and depending on the poll, 3 or 4% undecided. I mean, there's just nobody left to persuade. With some of these news developments that come out, the debate, 60 Minutes interview, maybe if Trump does well, he can recapture 1 or 2 points worth of soft Trump supporters, people who aren't whole hog, ride or die in his camp, but sort of held their nose and voted for him last time and might do it again. But it's really around the margins. There's just not a lot of people left that can be persuaded at this point, or that haven't voted.
Well, right. And the other part of that is like, I kind of forgot about impeachment and it suddenly remembered it last night. And I mention it only because the polls haven't really even moved since before impeachment. People have known for months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is this thing of you know, we just kind of have to get through this to election day, but it doesn't seem like anyone is really on the fence. I mean, the Washington Post did this story, I think, about, you know, the undecideds. They talked to Ken Bone and this sort of like weird, they're almost like these creatures out in the wild, you know, that you have to find now.
You got to really hunt for them for sure.
There's the Trump's approval rating right when coronavirus hit. February 29th, March 1st, right about the time the first official death was reported in the United States, his 538 average in approval was, I think, 43.4. Right now, it's 43.6, 215,000 deaths later. It's like nothing has ever moved in this race.
Wow. So this is the time with the 10 days left, right, when both candidates typically would have honed their message. They got the winning message. They just ride it through to the end. I must admit, at this point, I have no idea what, and Jeff, you alluded to this a little earlier, what Donald Trump's campaign message is. I think it's pretty clear what Joe Biden's is. It's been COVID, 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 really, from the beginning. And here's an ad that the Biden campaign ran during the World Series, which I think says a lot about where his campaign stands today.
There is only one America. No Democratic rivers. No Republican mountains. Just this great land and all that's possible on it with a fresh start. There is so much we can do if we choose to take on problems and not each other. Joe Biden doesn't need everyone in this country to always agree. Just to agree, we all love this country.
Jason.
I was
half expecting... That sounds like it's all over, right?
Yeah. It does. I mean, like, they're... I wouldn't say that they're measuring the drapes, but I think that they're starting to. This is a, you know, as Jeff would say, you know, has said a couple times, this is a recognizable moment, right? I mean, this looks like a normal campaign, and this is a campaign that looks like it is, you know, in the home stretch and knows that they've got. They don't need to screw anything up, you know, like, and they just need to kind of like stay in this lane. It is a little sappy, you know. I mean, I almost, in my cynical mind, was really hoping that we'd just go straight into the voiceover for the Big Lebowski, because it's, you know, it's got the Sam Elliott type voice. I don't know if that is Sam Elliott.
No, it is Sam Elliott. Absolutely.
It is Sam Elliott.
Yeah. We got to clean up this town, God damn it.
Sam Elliott. One of the hottest voices in Hollywood. I'm just putting it out there.
So, you know, so we've got, like I said, I was kind of hoping for the Stranger and the Big Lebowski, you know, like to break in. But that's also Biden. I mean, Biden is corny. You know, he says malarkey, you know, and things like that. I mean, like, that's his appeal, is that he's Uncle Joe. And that, I think, is one of the things, too, that Trump has never been able to sort of define him. He's tried Sleepy Joe and now Corrupt Joe and all this kind of stuff. But, like, you know, Biden's a known brand, and the known brand is he's the guy who's not gonna like light the country on fire.
So we gotta take a quick break, but before we do, I just can anybody explain? I learned something last night. I almost fell off my chair twice. Donald Trump told us that Republicans are going to take back the House of Representatives this year.
Oh, my goodness.
Whoa. Jeff, did you see that coming?
No, I didn't. Nor do I see coming the Republicans taking back the House of Representatives. They should be really well positioned, because remember, Democrats won back a lot of districts where Trump won in 2016. And in a normal political year, Republicans should be primed to claw back a lot of those seats. In fact, the latest projections is that they're probably going to lose 5 to 10 seats yet again.
Yet again. Right. No, I thought that was... Addie?
I was just going to say that this is really interesting to me. The last time that a House majority flipped two elections in a row, obviously the House majority flipped in 2018, was 1954. And the last time that it flipped in a presidential year was 2 years earlier in 1952. This is, you know, everything else in the world going on. This is just really, really, really uncommon, even, you know, for the House majority to flip in a presidential year or twice in a row.
Okay, Eddie Baird and Jason Dick and Jeff Duffer. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, a couple of other issues to touch on and then get your favorite stories of the week here on the Bill Press Pod. And today's roundtable is brought to you by the Smart Union. Those unions that all got together, sheet metal, air, rail, and transportation workers, over 200,000 strong. The good men and women of the Smart Union, those who build and move America under the leadership of President Joseph Sellers. We salute them, thank them for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back with today's roundtable. Jason Dick joining us from Roll Call, Addie Baird from BuzzFeed, and Jeff Duffer from the National Journal. Just a little lightning round of things. Jeff, there's not going to be a stimulus package, it looks like, right?
No, I would guess not. And again, I would lay this at the feet of Trump's lack of leadership. McConnell and the Senate Republicans seem disinclined to do this. When Pelosi and Mnuchin seem inclined to do it, Trump himself has said a couple times that he wants a big number akin to Pelosi's big number. So if that's what he wants and that's what Pelosi wants, it's unclear to me why he doesn't bring McConnell over to the White House and say, hey, look, we're in election year. This could help me. This could help your vulnerable senators. Let's get this done.
Right. So instead, Addie, they're going to go ahead and confirm Amy Coney Barrett. I think we agree there's no doubt about that on Monday, which I guess McConnell thinks is a bigger plus for vulnerable Republican senators than passing a stimulus package.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that must be the calculus, right? And, I would say it seems a bit more in my mind, like the strategy might be less that it's good for Republican senators right now and more that it is good for the Republican Party for decades to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would agree with that, Bill. That I mean, this has been McConnell's sort of singular focus for, you know, for years now. I mean, he doesn't care, you know, about stimulus packages and so forth. I mean, this is the whole reason he's put up with Trump, is to get people like Barrett on the Supreme Court, and to also, you know, his picks on the appeals courts. I mean, that's where you can sort of solidify Republican policies. And he knows that.
Yeah.
I really think that there are going to be so many things that we look back at the Trump presidency and remember, but Trump's legacy will be the judiciary. He has reshaped the entire judiciary, and it is going to have aftershocks for decades to come.
Right. I think you have to say Trump's legacy and McConnell's legacy, both.
For sure.
Right? Yeah. For sure. Right. Just a comment from each of you. About the Senate, what do you think the chances are that Democrats are able to take back control of the Senate? Jason, how do you read it?
I mean, at this point, if I was betting, I would bet that, you know, you'd probably get a Democratic majority. We may have some trouble counting some of the votes for a little while. Who knows there? But just when you look at, you know, the sort of the shape that a lot of these Republican incumbents like Martha McSally, like Cory Gardner, like Susan Collins, like Tom Tillis, you know, they're struggling. They're like the president. They're behind, and they're not really providing a lot of reasons to vote for them, like why things would be different, why they should turn back somebody. And also, you know, the Democrats have really good candidates. I mean, like, it's a good combination of lots of Republicans on the defensive, lots of weak Republican candidates like McSally. She's really not a very good candidate. And then good Democratic class and people like John Hickenlooper and Sarah Gideon and Mark Kelly.
Yeah. Are you as upbeat about that, Jeff?
I would put it at about a coin flip. And the reason I am a little bit bearish on the Democrats is because Democrats in a few of these states are going to have to run ahead of Joe Biden. Look at a state like Montana, where Trump's probably going to win by, let's say, 10 points. Can Steve Bullock run ahead of Joe Biden by 10 points? I don't know. It seems like a tall order. I think my bet would be to split the difference, and I think it's probably going to come down to one, if not two, runoffs in Georgia on January 5th to decide the majority. And can you imagine the amount of money that's going to pour into Georgia over the Christmas holidays if that's the case?
It's a stimulus package in itself.
Ossoff just seems to attract millions of dollars wherever he turns.
So, Addie, it looks like the price of soybeans might be the deciding factor. How do you see the Senate going?
You know, I think I'm a little somewhere between Jason and Jeff here. I'm not quite as confident as Jason and maybe a little more confident than Jeff. And the reason I say that is because the map is simply friendly to Democrats this year in a way that it hasn't been, for example, in 2018. There are way more Republicans having to defend their seats. Obviously, the economy is not doing well. Trump is not polling well. And Democrats have an opportunity to really I think in all these states that Jason mentioned, knock off some really vulnerable Republican senators. It's a different world than it was 2 years ago when you had so many Democrats defending their seats in states that Trump won.
Oh, for sure. The map does favor more favorable this time around for Democrats. A great, great look back here at the week and great look back at last night's debate. Thank you, Addie. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jeff. And now we always ask you to, during the week with all this other stuff going on, there must have been something that said, oh my, this is interesting. This is fun or this is not so fun. Your favorite story of the week. Addie, let's start with you.
Sure. So, you know, I will start by saying I would be remiss not to mention I am the chair of the BuzzFeed News Union, and we had a really amazing week this week. And I know this isn't necessarily a printed story, but it is my favorite story of the week that the BuzzFeed News Union finally, after months of arguing over a basic labor protection with management, secured just cause as part of our job security proposal. And it is a huge, huge step for this union in our contract campaign and a huge, huge step for BuzzFeed. And I am so, so happy and so proud. So that is my favorite story of the week. But if you really want a printed story, the New Yorker profile of Andrew Cuomo that was headlined Andrew Cuomo, King of New York, is so good.
It is delicious. Yeah, I just finished it last night, actually, the New Yorker. It's Eric Baumgarten, I think, right? Is the writer?
It's Nick Baumgarten.
Nick Baumgarten, right? Well, congratulations on the union victory. Solidarity forever there, my brothers
Thanks,
and sisters
Bill.
At BuzzFeed. Jason, how about you?
So in Wednesday's Washington Post, I still get the print here at home in Capitol Hill. I can't quit it. There's this great story on page one, below the fold, about people, you know, leaving L.A. and Chicago and so forth and moving to Bozeman, Montana. And it's just this it's this great sort of story of it's a very old story, I think, but you know, the people leaving like their cramped Los Angeles apartment and then buying, you know, a big palace and so forth. And then,
and 20 acres or something.
Yeah, exactly. and you know, complete with the strain on the water table and the school districts and so forth and so on. And the locals feeling, muscled out of rental units and so forth. And I just thought I feel like I've read this story before, and it's like, it wasn't so much that I'd read it before, because I have read versions of that story before, and anything about gentrification that any number of outlets have done. But one of my favorite movies of all time is a 1975 movie called Rancho Deluxe. It's a movie starring Jeff Bridges and Sam Waterston as cattle rustlers in Montana, in 1970s Montana, and trying to deal with all this onslaught of terrible people moving to Montana and buying up old ranches. And there's this great scene where the trophy wife is like looking at the Gallatin Mountains or whatever and just says, "I miss Poughkeepsie." And I just thought this has been happening in Montana for decades. It's just, you know, we're getting around to it. You know, this is the coronavirus version of the story.
Yeah.
But if y'all haven't seen it, it's the movie's written by Tom McGlane, the novelist, and even Jimmy Buffett has a cameo in it. Singing Livingston Saturday Night.
Right. I read the article and I was wondering how long it's going to be before those people who moved to Montana say, "What the hell are we doing in Montana?"
I will say Montana is the only state in the United States where at-will employment is illegal. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, there you go. Now, Jeff, your first appearance here and your first favorite story of the week.
And it's so stupid.
you've come to the right
spirit.
Place.
That is the spirit.
You've come to the right place, Jeff.
Yeah, haven't heard mine yet.
Phil Collins's ex-wife has barricaded herself with armed guards in his Miami mansion and is demanding $20 million from him before she will leave. Yes.
I'm sorry. That is not stupid. That is feminism at work.
Is Brad Parscale involved in this?
Probably somewhere. I like this story so much.
What is
that? I have put together, I may share this on Spotify, I have put together a Genesis Phil Collins divorce playlist.
Oh.
On said playlist. Home by the Sea, Misunderstanding, Throwing It All Away, Separate Lives, Take Me Home, Both Sides of the Story, and Something Happened on the Way to Heaven.
That's awesome, Jeff.
That is awesome. Classic. That really is awesome. No, boy, nobody can top that. Thank you, Jeff. But I'll just mention my favorite story of the week is, and this has happened in a couple of states where these really ardent Trump supporters have gone out and spent their own money either to buy big signs or something, or in a couple of cases to buy a billboard, which one big Trumper did up in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, on Route 21. And there's a big billboard with a picture of Joe Biden. And then the wording says, Biden's dementia is worsening. He's not fit. And the word dementia is spelled D-I-M-E-N-S-I-A. He spent all that money for that billboard. So my advice is, if you're going to do a Trump billboard, don't ask Donald Trump how to spell the words on the billboard, because
everybody needs an editor.
I've always wondered why sign makers don't employ editors, or at least tell people that their sign is misspelled before they print the sign.
That's what I didn't, in fact. Great roundtable, guys. Hey, Jeff Dufour, great to have you on board. Thank you. Editor-in-Chief of National Journal. Jason Dick, Deputy Editor of Roll Call. Thanks for coming back, Jason.
Always a pleasure.
And Addie, so good to have you. Addie Baird, National Political Reporter for BuzzFeed. That's it for today's roundtable. Thank you to our panel, and thank you all for listening. Please, please, please subscribe to the Bill Press Pod if you haven't already done so. By wherever you're listening to this podcast, just pull up the Bill Press Pod, click on subscribe, and relax. 10 days, or maybe 15 days, or maybe 20 days, or someday, it's all going to be over. In the meantime, stay strong, stay safe, stay sane, and come back and see us on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.